What if everything you believed about happiness was built on a lie? Catherine Gray spent 2 decades chasing joy at the bottom of wine bottles, convinced alcohol was the golden ticket to confidence, connection, and fun. By her mid-20s, she'd landed her dream media job in London, partied with celebrities in underground Soho clubs, and collected stories everyone envied. Yet beneath the glamorous surface lurked a terrifying truth. She was dying, one drink at a time. Her hands trembled so violently, she couldn't sign her name. She'd arrive at restaurants an hour early just to get the shake stopper inside her. Morning drinking became routine. Calling in sick became strategic. The woman who seemed to have it all was actually drowning. And alcohol, the thing she thought was saving her, was holding her head underwater. Addiction isn't a moral failing. It's a hijacking of your brain's reward system. With regular heavy drinking, pathways between your reward center and movement control strengthen into superhighways, while connections from your rational brain weaken into dirt roads. Your prefrontal cortex, judgment, logic, stops steering the ship, while your striatum, reward seeking, takes control. Dopamine isn't the pleasure chemical, it's the wanting chemical. This explains why addicts crave alcohol even when they've stopped enjoying it. Each time you drink to soothe anxiety, you teach your brain that drinking is the solution. The catch-22? When you don't drink, your brain gets stressed about breaking the habit, creating the very anxiety you're trying to escape. Here's the hope. Neuropathways are like hiking trails. Creating a new sober pathway feels like forging through dense forest, explaining why the first month is brutal. Yet research shows gray matter volume in the prefrontal cortex returns to baseline within 6 months, then continues increasing beyond normal levels. Your brain literally reconstructs itself. Sobriety doesn't just restore your brain, it makes it stronger. The first days without alcohol feel like waking up in a trashed hotel room that happens to be your life. Every numbed emotion comes roaring back. Rage, shame, grief, terror, all at full volume. You swing wildly between euphoria and wretchedness, sometimes within the same hour. Gray developed small but effective tactics. She created a twilight hair washing ritual. The 20-minute process created a barrier between her and the wine shop. She obsessively cleaned because movement defeats cravings. She counted days with an app tracking drinks avoided, money saved, and calories not consumed. She learned that a thought cannot make you drink, only the physical act of picking up a glass can. Most powerfully, she discovered addictive voice recognition therapy, which involves separating the tyrannical voice urging you to drink from your true self. She named hers Voldemort, nefarious yet charming, silken but pure evil. She argued with him, laughed at his ridiculous suggestions, calmly deconstructed his case. The key wasn't engaging in debate, but making a firm decision not to drink, then defending it fiercely. The first 30 days were brutal, simultaneously beautiful and brutal, filled with new tools: swimming, nutritious food, fascinating books, bubble baths, sober friends, milestone treats. Her first sober party was excruciating. While her friend became the life of the party after 6 vodka tonics, Gray hid in toilets and escaped to the garden, silently crying on the night bus home. Yet the next day brought clarity. She'd survived her first sober party in 20 years. More importantly, she realized the alcohol was the attraction, not the nightlife itself. Without drinking, daytime became vibrant. She discovered Day Fun Girl, enjoying cream teas, obstacle courses, beach walks, and vintage shopping while her former drinking buddies slept their weekends away. Sobering up revealed her party girl persona was just an outer shell. Inside was a socially awkward, bookish introvert she hadn't seen since age 12. She'd used alcohol as a confidence cheat code, skipping natural social skill development. Her happy place transformed from dark nightclubs to nature's splendor. What she mistook as a desire to dance was really just wanting to drink. Now she finds joy running through forests, watching fog lift from valleys, strolling beaches at sunrise. 3 months sober in Northern Ireland, she truly saw a waterfall's magnificence without rushing to a pub. Studies show nature accelerates trauma healing and hospital recovery. As Eminem said about his own recovery, "I love leaves now, man." There's a jaw-dropping scene in The Matrix showing an endless field of people plugged into fake reality. That's exactly how it feels to unplug from our alcohol-centric society. Pub signs promise booze, food, fun, while pointing to real life outside with a sad face. Television characters like Alicia Florrick and Olivia Pope drink enormous goblets of wine nightly, yet face zero consequences. No lost jobs, no breakups, nothing. They represent an El Dorado viewers desperately seek, consequence-free, constant wine. Society has a massive blind spot about alcohol's addictive nature. We're not surprised when social smokers progress to morning smoking, yet talking about alcohol as a villain is socially taboo. British scientists controversially announced that alcohol is more dangerous than crack or heroin. On a harm scale of 100, alcohol scored 72, while heroin was 55 and crack 54. The media buries uncomfortable alcohol truths. When the WHO announced alcohol as the international number one killer, causing 24 deaths daily in the UK, few papers covered it. We now know alcohol directly causes 8 cancers and shortens lifespan by 10 to 12 years. The alcohol propaganda machine is finally cracking, but we're still swimming in a culture that glamorizes our most dangerous legal drug. In recovery, people speak of a life beyond your wildest dreams. Gray's modest early goals, her own flat, paying bills on time, steady work, were surpassed when she moved to Bruges a year sober. But sobriety doesn't guarantee perfection. Within months, she lost her job and discovered her boyfriend had cheated. She realized emotional pain is a tunnel you must traverse. The drinking tunnel has trapdoors offering temporary oblivion, but when you return, the tunnel has grown longer and more frightening. The sober tunnel is straightforward, dark and tough, but finite. You feel everything, but the light remains visible. Getting sober felt like a condemned choice, but made her infinitely happier, like trading a wizened plant for a greenhouse of sunflowers. Her body transformed. Bloodshot eyes came alive, alcoholic flush faded, bloated face revealed cheekbones. Energy skyrocketed. She stopped biting her nails, unconscious self-harm reflecting her wounded mind. Her father died a week before finishing this book. Their final night together, she and her brother played pool, drank lemonade, and talked, instead of getting wasted. When she was 24 and Dad was 10 years sober, he danced around the living room, showing her you could dance without alcohol. "If I can, you can," he said. She used to wake up into the nightmare. Now she wakes up into the dream.